Hi, welcome to Redwood Wonk. I'm Matthew Owen.
And I'm Eric Kirk.
This week, we discuss the assault on PBS and NPR, the special elections in Wisconsin and Florida, and the opposition, Cory Booker and Gerald Huffman style. Good evening. You're either watching or listening to Redwood Wonk. I'm with Matthew Owen. My name is Eric Kirk. We're discussing national political news of the day, and we're going to start with the hearings on that took place last week, the day after our last recording, on PBS and NPR, basically the public broadcasting system, which has been federally funded since forever, actually since the 1960s. And it's not just about the news, although the attacks from Marjorie Taylor Greene, who are in this committee, that is, it's actually a subcommittee of Jordan's committee, and basically attacked it as propaganda, as being somehow influenced by leftists. And there's no doubt that NPR, maybe more so than PBS, has some leftist leanings towards the coverage, but the factual news coverage is they rarely have to make any admissions or recanting, because they are factually accurate. The bias comes in the types of stories they choose to cover, which are of more interest to left-leaning people than right-leaning people. And that's something that could be rectified if there was ever a serious discussion about it. But also the children's programming is under fire. And as one of the CEOs said, I believe the PBS CEO, they're both women, said that the children's programming on PBS, especially Sesame Street, is the most trusted children's programming there is in the country, in terms of experts, in terms of how useful they are in helping kids to learn how to read and write and do arithmetic. And in fact, people I know who have come from other countries say they use Sesame Street and other children's programming to learn English. It's that effective. Yep. So we have this under threat, talks of either cutting off federal funding entirely, which I believe, you know, I'm not sure exactly what percentage, but that would make it real difficult. Yes, they do have underwriting, but there's no way they could do what they do without the federal funds. There was some comic relief in it when Representative Garcia put a picture of Elmo up and asked the CEOs, is Elmo or has he ever been a member of the Communist Party? Of course, she shrugs that off as being ridiculous. And he says, but he's red, right? You know, I mean, it was basically a reference to McCarthyism, because that's kind of what it is. I'm going to turn it over to you in a minute, Matt, but I want to talk about its history of actually some very balanced programming that involved programming by conservatives like John McLaughlin and William F. Buckley.
Right. And also the Muppets have been around since on Sesame Street since 1969. Yes. It's literally an institution I grew up on. You probably grew up on it. Your kids grew up on it. My kids grew up on it. It's non-political. It's puppetry. And teaches kids how to be nice to each other. And if that's a bad thing, I think we need a whole lot more of that. The other thing with you mentioning about NPR, it does lean left, but as we talked earlier, they do factual reporting and actually investigative journalism, which is not much of that out there. And if you're a person that doesn't like the facts, you're probably watching Fox News. If you're a person who likes the facts and you watch NPR, you kind of go, wow, that's kind of interesting what they're doing here, where they do the research to find out what's going on, who's funding this, where did this rumor start? And they'll tell you where these things come from.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's left-leaning and there's left-leaning. I mean, I'm not a big fan of MSNBC. I like some of the programs. Sometimes I find it interesting, but it's like the same thing night after night. It's basically just stuff to get left, and actually not that far left, but left of center, angry and then feeling good, you know, and it's That way, now I'll give her credit. Rachel Maddow is willing to interview right-wing figures. They just don't want to come onto her show. Same thing with Sean Hannity, but sometimes he does get left-wingers on his show. Bernie Sanders is on all the time. Pete Buttigieg, people who aren't afraid to be, express themselves because they have a firm, moral political center, aren't afraid of that kind of a thing. And yeah, they're going to be grilled and the like. But what I really miss is William Buckley's firing line. I enjoyed the McLaughlin group too and his interviews, but a little bit less interesting. It was more typical interviews and typical, talking heads rambling about stuff intelligently, but it was only a half hour long. But Buckley put together, he had a show on, and he would not be afraid. Sometimes there were people that outclassed him. Like there was a classic interview we had with Noam Chomsky, and Chomsky just took him apart calmly and politely. It was just and without interrupting. He's had other people on back in his left wing days. Alan Dershowitz also outclassed him because he's a brilliant lawyer.
What the heck happened to him?
Yeah, that's a whole.
The money at the subject trial and says, you know what? Leaning right puts money in my pocket.
Yeah, maybe that, or maybe it was drugs he took on Epstein's Island. I don't know. But anyways, it's he's a lot different now. There was one program in particular that I really enjoyed. He would have these debates, and a lot of times it would be four conservatives against four liberals, usually academic, a politician, somebody, in a practical matter. But he had, it was about the war on drugs, and the war on drugs wasn't strictly a partisan issue. There were libertarian elements of conservatives that were uneasy about it, including William Buckley, by the way, who did like to imbibe in marijuana and would take his boat out into international waters and smoke it there. he did.
Well, that's not good enough.
It's in his book. He had one show that had, I believe it was Pat Schroeder, and I'm forgetting, it was a representative, Democratic representative from New York, I'm forgetting his name, he was prominent at the time, arguing for the war on drugs. And he meanwhile teamed up with Ira Blatt, I want to say Ira Blatt, but I'm not, no, that's the local attorney, Ira something another, who was the head of the ACLU at the time, and he was siding with Buckley with regard to the war on drugs. And I remember the congressman grilling him because they get to ask each other questions. All four, each of the four would get to pair up against each of the other four. It's like a round robin. And Ira was asked by the guys, several times, so you agree with William Buckley? So you agree with William Buckley? And I think on the third time he said, hardly ever. So stop saying that. It was wild. And everybody laughed. It was polite. I mean, there was a lot of kind of witty and put downs and the rest, but it was all in good sport. It was interesting to watch. Buckley, in both his firing line in terms of the debates he organized and his interviews. I mean, it was, but he was a brilliant guy. Actually moved to the left a little bit, went in his last days saying that, it's completely understandable that students should be socialists. And he also opposed the Iraq War. So it was, and then his son ended up being banned from National Review, the magazine that Buckley started, because he endorsed Obama.
And then I think that you're looking for is Ira Glasser.
Ira Glasser, that's it. Thank you. Not to be confused with Ira Glasser, who does the This American Life or whatever it is. That's a different guy entirely. But we should have more of this, and they should bring it back. You want to comment on that, Matt?
We lost the war on drugs. So let's just throw that out there right now. That's been a losing war for 60 years. I'm agreeing with you. I think we should bring in more of the right-wing people on a point-counterpoint. I'd love to have this on a local basis here. I think Brian Papstein does that on his Ken's radio show. Where he brings on people to talk about issues. And I think we need to do that in local TVs. They should be doing that around the country, but bringing both sides in and having a point counterpoint debate on air live.
I agree. And a real debate, not this stuff that they had on CNN's Crossfire and Hannity and Combs. And because that was just really people trying to make points so each side can believe their side won. It wasn't in depth. It wasn't long enough to be in depth. But real discussions where they, where they can actually hear each other and address the issues in a way that maybe make people think differently. Not necessarily, I don't think I was ever converted by a whole lot of those shows, but I always thought about the issues differently afterwards.
And they need pushback too. Too much times, if you watch Fox News, someone comes on, says a blatant lie, and they just let it go and move on. So yeah. Peter Navarro, Trump's head of trade, says these upcoming tariffs are going to be a tax relief for Americans. And people are going, the hell is he talking about? It's going to be an inflationary thing. Our prices are going up. But if no one pushes back on him, and you watch Fox News, guess what you believe? Because you don't read.
Well, and that's how Fox News got into trouble with the defamation suit from Dominion and ended up paying, I think, what it was, an $800 million, because Sean Hannity was allowing these crazy conspiracy theorists to say this stuff over and over, and he didn't believe it. And he admitted that in an email, somehow completely forgetting that in litigation, these emails, come to surface. And he admitted it. And they had Dominion people on to explain themselves once. Everybody screamed, you don't want those horrible people on again. And they never invited them again. And they kept wanting to say, let me respond to this. And it cost them a lot. Even Fox right. News didn't, I'm sure their shareholders didn't appreciate having to shell out $800 million for a settlement. And that's the thing. MSNBC might be a little better in terms of I mean, Rachel Maddow does research her stuff, but it's still kind of the same thing, preaching to the choir, and the same thing night after night, same people. I mean, I don't think the Russia thing was entirely a hoax, but they overdid it. It's like you don't have a smoking gun. And it's what I always tell conspiracy theorists, even if you think it happened, if you don't have the smoking gun, you can't prove anything, right?
Right.
It's just, and so cover it. And when developments come out, cover it, but not night after night after night, it's just, because it turns that into the issue when the issue should have been immigration policy, should have been environmental policy. I mean, these things, if the courts were going to catch up to Trump, it was going to happen or it wasn't going to happen. And, there's nothing that you can do every night by harping on it, because the only people watching you are mostly 90% people that are in your corner. So it, PBS needs to offer something different from that. The idea is that it's independent from advertising influences, and it can provide everything. We talked about the children's programming. It's not really political. I mean, yes, they've had people like Pete Seeger on, but Pete Seeger came on to sing with Oscar about garbage. They've had more conservative people on there too, but it's there for the programming, for the learning, the movies that they've done.
The documentaries.
What's that? Documentaries, right. Yeah, a lot of them, really good programming. Their music programming, I don't like everything. They've been replaying Lawrence Welk on, Sunday afternoons. And that was, I didn't like it as a kid. And
Not my cup of tea.
No, either. But, somebody likes it, obviously, or they wouldn't be putting it on. And NPR, I mean, they've got podcasts that are fascinating, and the morning news is, okay, they cover stories. I mean, there's different types of bias of in terms of left and right. And even left and right is kind of limited because they're, as we talked about, the drug war, for instance, isn't a left-right issue, really. But there's two types of bias. One where they are slanted. And the other is where they are factually accurate and don't have to issue retractions, but the types of stories they cover are of interest to a particular segment of people. And that and NPR definitely does play to its kind of professional, liberal, urban class. Although, you know, I mean, that's what it does. But diversify it. That's fine. You know, right. Call for some diversifying. Bring it in. Don't be shutting down the programming.
At the end of the day, this is all about the Trump administration and the Republicans using funding to control people and control things. The Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, I think he cut that day one in office, just said, we're not funding you anymore. You're all fired by, which was tragic because it did a lot of good. And now they're seeing who else can they take funds away from, fire the entire staff if they're at all government employees. But if you take away the funding from NPR and PBS, they'll slowly die.
That is it. It can't. It's something. It's a grand project, and it's worth the public investment. And I just hope that there are enough Republicans in there in the close districts, you know, to stand by that, because I do think it will backfire on people in swing districts and swing states.
Yeah, we're already seeing pushback. Some Republicans realize we have to save the nation and save democracy.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that in the next segment.
Okay.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
And you can listen to Redwood Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
All right. Okay. So there were special elections. These were the first major special elections. Not quite. There was a last week, there was a decision. I think we talked about it in Pennsylvania. A beat red district flipped Democrat, barely by 50%. But it was seen as not a real good harbinger for Republican fortunes in the midterm. So there was discussion as to whether or not that was a fluke. And we had special elections in several states, but the major ones were in Florida and Wisconsin. Wisconsin was the big one, about $100 million spent on it, including $20 to $25 million spent by Elon Musk, who did things that would be illegal in California.
Giving voters $1 million? I'll say I'm voting for the Republican candidate if you're going to give me a $1 million check.
Exactly. I know. And then everybody was getting $20 at least. And I wonder how many people actually took the $20 and went ahead and voted for the Democrat. But it was basically a Ponzi scheme. But the race was between Judge Susan Crawford and she was supported by Democrats, Brad Schimel, supported by Republicans. These are not, they're running for the Supreme Court. These are not partisan positions, but it's very important because right now the Democratically supported or appointed people on the Supreme Court have a 4-3 majority. If Brad Schimel had won last night, it would have flipped that. And there are going to be some very important decisions, particularly about gerrymandering and redistricting. In Wisconsin, it's one of the states. There are Democrats have gerrymandered states as well, but Wisconsin was gerrymandered by Republicans such that every election for the legislature, the Democrats would receive half the votes, but only end up with about a third of the representation. So that has been held unconstitutional in Wisconsin by the liberal majority, and there's actually going to be a further redistricting, even though we're to the middle of the decade. It usually happens at the beginning and end with a census. But anyway, so it was a high stakes election, because it could mean one or two more Democratic congressional districts, and it definitely means more districts in the state legislature. So it was a big deal. Also, Elon Musk has got some kind of lawsuit against him going. I'm not sure what it's about exactly, but he wants a Supreme Court that is going to rule in his favor. So he showed up there with the cheese head thing and the rest. And it may be that it's poison, because she won by 10 percentage points, 55 to 45%.
That was supposed to be a close race.
It was supposed to be a close race, and it turned out to be a landslide. And and of course he won in the usual parts. I mean, whenever you look at Wisconsin elections, because I've studied, I always look at the maps. And when the Republicans win, it's like the whole state is red except for Milwaukee, Madison, and Eau Claire, right? You know, it's and Green Bay even leans left, even though that's a city. Leans towards the Republicans. Green Bay did not go to the Republicans last night, and a number of rural districts went. But the point is that there was a major shift. And if you go to the New York Times website and look at their election results, they will show you that there was movement since November from the Democrats, from the Republicans to the Democrats in every single county. You see those little blue arrows.
Right.
This was a big loss, especially for the Republicans, having spent so much money in it. About, I think, about twice as much as the Democrats. Democrats also poured a bunch of money. Soros, Chandler, you know, poured a bunch of money in, but also in a slew of small donations for both sides. But Musk gave, I think, $6 million to the candidate, $2 million to the Republican Party, and then did this crazy Ponzi scheme where he ended up giving up $3 million checks, one to each of the voters who won a kind of a lottery thing. Again, in California, that would be illegal. I was living in Santa Cruz one time when a local coffee shop would give you a free cookie if you brought in a stub to show that you voted. And it wasn't even, they didn't care who you voted for. They just wanted to reward you for voting. The elections department shut them down, saying that was rewarding, you know, that was electioneering. That's nothing compared to what happened in Wisconsin.
Right. The other thing too, if I'm a Democratic candidate going forward, I'm only hoping and praying that Elon Musk is up there front and center against my Republican opponent. And I hope Trump endorses the Republican opponent. What this shows right now is Musk's money can be defeated, and Trump's endorsement isn't worth that much. I think unless Trump's on the top of the ticket, Republicans may not really care if Trump endorses him or not, unless Trump is running for office himself.
That's true, because in the midterm elections, both 2018 and 2022, a lot of those voters did not turn out. They don't see it as important. They want Trump, and they could turn out to vote for Trump, but they aren't motivated for whatever reason to come out and vote for other Republicans. You know, there was another special election in Florida, actually two of them congressional districts that had been vacated by Matt Gaetz and Mike Waltz, who's been in the news lately for, his texting problems. These are beat red districts. I believe one of them, the difference was 36 or 37 percentage points in November favoring Trump. And I believe the other was 30, and 31. They cut those in half.
Yep.
Even more than half, actually. Randy Fine, the Republican, did win against Josh Weil, but it was by like 12 or 13 percentage point. And Petronas defeated Gabe Vallemont by about 15 points.
Not 37.
No, exactly. And this has got a number of Republicans worried. And if you're a Republican in a swing district or a swing state, yeah, you definitely don't want Elon Musk coming. Do you even want Trump coming to your district?
I wouldn't right now. The other issue is what's baked into the Republicans is what's coming down the road. I don't know if you've heard, but they've cut back on HUD Section 8 housing vouchers. This is a federal program that it's primarily for extremely low income people. It'll be seniors pretty much living on Social Security, someone who's making a minimum wage of $7.25 in a Republican district, someone who's on Social Security disability, where you have to give them, the landlord, one third of your gross income, and then the federal government picks up the difference. Well, Musk wants to cut back spending on this because if you're living in LA, Bay Area, or New York, you're not going to get an apartment for $400 a month.
No.
And that's all they can pay is 30% of their gross goes to their rent, and the rest is coming in from the government. They're cutting back on these vouchers, so very soon seniors and people on disabilities are going to be evicted and become homeless. That's not going to be popular. They're cutting funding to food banks, where a lot of the poor people get their food, and they're cutting. They want to cut funding to SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Program. This is what we call used to be called food stamps back in the day. They give them a debit card these days.
Yeah.
When people start to go hungry and they're homeless, and finally they want to cut back on Medicaid, which pretty much you get into the red states, about 40% of the people are on Medicaid. If I can't get medical health care, if I can't get food, if I can't get shelter, I'm not voting for the red team.
Right.
Pretty simple.
No, and the farmers are affected too, because some of them are subsidized to, in order to produce food for these programs.
And a lot of the farmer stuff went overseas to the U.S. aid projects, where it's easier with foreign countries to give them food and medicine than it is to give them bombs and bullets. It's what they call soft power. Well, they're not exporting the farmers' goods anymore because Musk went and slashed all these programs and agencies. So there's farmers that got stuff where they can't even sell their product right now.
Of course, you know, one of the things that may be turning some voters against them is I think that in their zeal that Trump and company and Musk forgot that Social Security is the third rail of American politics. You don't attack Social Security in any way. And then they put out that they're going to close a bunch of offices. They put out that you're going to have to come in and prove that you're the person. And I think that has a lot of people nervous.
It does. And 40% of the seniors in retirement live off Social Security alone. They don't have a pension. They don't have additional investments in real estate. They live off Social Security. And you tell someone, I'm going about to cut your sole method of funding, it's going to send panic through a lot of seniors. So I just think as they go down this road, it is slash and burn everything in sight to get billionaires tax breaks. People are going to figure out this is a scam.
The Commerce Secretary a couple of weeks ago said something that he's going to regret because the Democrats are probably going to use it for advertisements over and over again. But he's a billionaire himself. So he says, well, you know, the only people who complain are the fraudsters. My 93-year-old mother received... didn't get a check. She would just wait till next month. And
said no clueless. Senior ever.
Yeah, ever. Right. They need to pay rent. They need to pay their bills. They need to buy food.
As they're going after the cuts in food for the poor, they're going after cuts for food banks, as they're going after cuts for Medicaid, which is coming, if these work and the voters are okay with that, they'll go after Social Security and Medicare next. Name a senior out there who does not like Social Security and Medicare. You can't find one, not one.
Well, they paid into it. This is not a program. This is money that they've paid into. It's a system. You know, so for them to cut back and say they're going to use the money for something else, those taxes, they shouldn't even call them taxes, really. They should call them premiums that we pay into.
Or your Social Security investment.
Yes. Yeah, you are
your Social Security tax, your Social Security investment on your pay stub.
And it should not be regarded as the government's money. They shouldn't be borrowing against it. They shouldn't be doing anything with it other than administering and distributing Social Security payment. If any private company did that, they'd get arrested for fraud.
And all of Elon Musk's talk about Social Security checks are going out to 120-year-old people. He's not brought one single name and address forward to verify this. They do typical Republican speak. They throw out some crazy conspiracy theory, and no one asks them about it. Let's look into this.
Well, what I keep saying is whenever I encounter somebody who says, oh, they've come out with all this fraud and the rest, I said, wake me up when they actually file charges, criminal right. charges against somebody for committing fraud. I mean, it's just it's over the top. I mean, maybe there is somebody collecting checks on 120 or somewhere, but it's certainly not widespread.
Show me the person's name and address, because I want to follow up who's actually cashing that check.
Yeah, right. And you should be coming down hard on him. But what's taking so long? Should right. have been handed over to the Department of Justice for prosecution the minute they found that.
Elon Musk said a 9-month-old baby took out a $10 million Small Business Administration, an SBA loan. Give me the kid's name and address. And let's go verify this, Elon.
Yeah.
He's a pathological liar.
Right. I mean, they haven't, because they don't even know how to look for the stuff, really. I mean, it's Keystone Cops, 19-year-old hacker in there,
And Eric, there's one thing worse that I saw this week. Elon was up on stage in Wisconsin talking with some guy with Doge at Social Security saying, look at all these illegal immigrants who obtained Social Security numbers. That's correct. Not a single one of them will receive a check, but they get a Social Security number for their employer so they can get an actual paycheck.
It's not actually
Social Security taxes.
Yeah,
and they never receive it.
It's not actually a Social Security number. It's an employee identification number.
Right.
And anybody can get one. And the reason being that the IRS wants to receive money. They don't care
whether taxes. You're
illegally. Yeah. It's it's that's right. They all have these numbers. It's perfectly legal. In fact, it is the way that they legally work, whether they're legal residents or not. They don't,
Right. It's called a TIN, a taxpayer identification number.
Yeah, that's right.
And you have to have that so your employer can process the check and pay the appropriate payroll taxes. Or in our case, your Social Security investment that you're investing into, and you will never receive a check when you retire.
That's right. That's, and same with Medicare. You might receive True. Medicaid, but not Medicare. But this is backfiring. I think this has a lot to do with the election results last night. I think there are people who are either voting for the Democrat or just not voting because they're disgusted.
And like you say, Eric, if you watch Fox News, you're going to have those magic three words: fraud, waste, and abuse. Give me a specific. I've yet to see a single specific come out of it. All they say is we've had a gazillion, jillion dollars of fraud, waste, and abuse. Give me a specific thing. And then, like you said, let's go after and arrest the son of a bitch who did it.
Right. I mean, it's a serious thing. It undermines it. But like I said, are there 5 of them? Are there 10 of them? Are there 10,000 of them? I mean, it's a lot to talk about. I do think that's why they're falling back. I also just think that the chaos that's around the White House has led to people saying, what are we doing? Okay, the prices of eggs finally dropped temporarily. Gas went up. And other groceries in general are going up. Beef is all of a sudden up.
$5.79 a gallon in Humboldt County, the highest gas prices in the nation. $5.79.
Yeah, you can get it for $5.29 at Costco. But yeah, Now, of course, as we've discussed, California is higher. We have a high tax. We've got to pay for the treatment so people in Los Angeles can breathe, that kind of thing. But
I could argue with you on that one, Eric. It's off a long time from the 70s.
Yeah, it is, but it's still what does it. We don't have smog alerts anymore like we did. I mean, maybe a few here and there, but that's 20 cents on the dollar, on the $5 or whatever. Well, we've exhausted it, but I'm going to have a prediction about this at the end of the show, but we need to move on to the next segment. If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
You can listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
You want to talk about Cory Booker and his 25-hour filibuster marathon and kind of talk a little bit about our local representative, Jared Huffman, town hall in Eureka?
I definitely want to talk about it because there's a lot. You know, what Jared Huffman, as I understand, was basically trying to explain to people, we don't have any power institutionally. There's nothing the Democrats can do right now. Voters did not give us the power to get in the way other than filibusters and a few other things. But if we don't pry a few Republicans away on these votes, there is no power. Now, their Republicans might start dissenting, as we discussed in the last one. There may be people in swing districts and swing states that don't want to go down with the ship. We'll see. But so far, Trump has managed to keep discipline on the voting. But Huffman is trying to point out that there's nothing we can really do. We don't have either branch of the House and the rest. So then the question is, what do we do? What do they do? You had Representative Green, who did a protest at, it wasn't the State of the Union, but something very similar, Trump speaking to Congress. And he basically got up and started yelling. And I don't know that that was productive or a good idea, but at least he was trying to do something, right?
Right.
I mean, there are Democrats that want their people to fight, and Jeffries is like saying, well, there's nothing we can do, and Schumer is wimping out. And I don't necessarily completely disagree with him on refusing to shut down the government. What the Republicans learned is that the party that does shut down the government tends to get the blame for it, and they probably had internal polling that reflected that. But he's not fighting. You know, he's not even looking like he's fighting. Cory right. Booker yesterday broke the record. It's not technically a filibuster. He just basically took the floor and he held it for 25 hours, breaking Strom Thurmond's 24-hour record. And that was part of the motivation, by the way.
Strom Thurmond was upset back then. They were trying to give blacks rights and the right to vote in this country. So he was very upset.
He was trying to filibuster against the 1957 Civil Rights Act, a precursor to the 1964 one. And he was angry because there were a few Southerners in the Senate that were going to pass it, including Lyndon Johnson, by the way, give him credit. He filibustered and he went on for as long as he could. He was young. At the time, younger than Cory Booker. And so Cory Booker wanted to break that. He didn't want that record to be held. Now, the Jimmy Stewart character, I think, technically lasted longer, but he also...
It was a fictional film.
in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. But in reality, this is the longest one ever done. It meant that he had to be real careful of what he said. He actually had a paper out to read what he needed to say to avoid losing the floor to stop it. He could take questions, but he had to say, I'm ready to take the question and read a sentence. And he didn't want to get tired and mess up that sentence. So he had the paper with him. He fasted for several days before because he did not want to have to go to the bathroom. He had two glasses of water the whole time, and he was sore. He said that everything was there. He has to stand. He can't sit. He has to stay at the microphone. He's got to stay there. And he could get relief from Democrats who could ask long-winded questions. They can only ask
questions.
So he can
run to the bathroom real quick.
That was just it was like a line from James Joyce's Ulysses. The Democrats would ask a long, long question, sentence, and so it was kind of a game, but it was interesting and it drew attention. It wasn't against a particular bill though, so it wasn't a filibuster. It was just Cory Booker before the special election wanting to make this history and show the Democrats that he's willing to fight.
And Eric, I'll just say, he just pre-announced his 2028 presidential candidacy.
Did he do that? I didn't hear that.
No, that's what this thing was. Oh, is someone is he fighting? Here's a Democrat who will stand up when Trump tries to do his third term.
It would certainly make sense that he would do that because more people know his name now than did before he did this, although he did run for president.
Gavin Newsom is doing right-wing podcast. He wants to get out there. and let everybody know he's talking.
Yeah. No, there's a there. I mean, there's going to be a pantheon. You know, we can talk, have another show to talk about who we think is going to run for election, assuming we have an election. Right. I mean, my choice for the president would have been this last time around, and hopefully will be next time, is Governor Gretchen Whitmer Michigan. And because I think she could win it. She could be the first woman to be elected president.
God, I hate to see a woman run and lose again.
I do too, but she's got a lot of things that the other women didn't have. She's from a Midwestern state. She's popular there. They tried to kill her, and she came out of it. Okay, that's kind of gives, you know, a little bit of, some type of stimulants. But anyway, I don't want to get too carried away on that. Booker was putting up a fight. Democrats who are showing up to their meetings. Of course, Republicans are afraid to show up to the meetings now. The few that do are getting yelled at. And are they Democrats coming from neighboring districts or even from those districts? I don't know.
They're being paid by George Soros.
What's that?
They're being paid by George Soros. They're paid actors. Don't you know? I saw them on Fox News. It must be true.
Oh, I heard that anybody who ever attends a demonstration is paid by George Soros. I went to a lot of demonstrations over the years. I'm going to have to sue for my back pain. But anyway,
Representative Jared Huffman said that during his town hall this past weekend. He said, "How many of you got your check from George Soros to be here?" Got a good laugh.
Did he get yelled at at all?
He did. And this is exactly why Democrats are losing elections. Bill Maher and I from HBO think very much alike. We need to have Democrats who are sensible and not get in the weeds. You and I talked about them before about the transgender issues. It doesn't lose you votes. It loses you elections. For the people who stand up and scream about the genocide in Palestine and Gaza, the rest of the country doesn't care about that. They care about the price of eggs, the price of gas, where my wages are going, how inflationary is this tariff going to be on me. They do not care about Gaza. They
might care, but they don't see it as a political.
They're moving on. It doesn't affect their life, and that's what they ultimately vote on. But no, not here in Humboldt County. We have to have our woke progressive socialists stand up and start going, "I don't like your vote on for Israel and the genocide in Gaza." It's like, oh my God. Right. Why don't you just help Democrats lose elections?
To be fair, then that's probably not a Democrat specifically. Might be may or may not be registered Democrat, might also be registered Green or something else. But that's their activist agenda. So not necessarily, right. You know, they feel that by putting pressure on United States leaders to cut off Israel from aid, that they can accomplish this by basically taking over meetings.
Didn't work.
How did it play out at the meeting?
They go, "This is how crazy the Democrats are."
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, we don't know if the person is even a Democrat, but you know, that's. But
I'm going to agree with what Huffman said: is we lost the White House, we lost the Senate, we lost Congress. We have something called the midterms coming up in 2026. We can make a difference if we flip 3 Senate seats and 21 Republicans in Congress, we can actually stop Trump from doing the crazy train stuff that he's doing. But Democrats have to get out and vote in the midterms with quality candidates.
And they may just do that. I mean, they do have a history of it. One of the things I remember, there was a Mother Jones, fairly left-wing magazine back in 1984, said, what if they held an election and everybody came, and it showed both Mondale and Reagan looking in terror, saying they wouldn't be on it anymore? Because it was a belief that there was this massive left-wing secret majority out there that just couldn't be encouraged to come to the polls. We've learned that larger turnouts don't necessarily mean more progressive. It could mean that, because there are progressives who are less likely to vote than a lot of Republicans who vote not just as to win an election, but they see it as a sense of duty, that civic mindedness doesn't necessarily translate to left wing politics a lot of time. So it's like the whole thing is, well, will it do any good to vote? A lot of people, and liberals too, I've voted in every election since I was turned 18, but they vote. What good is it going to do? They don't ask what good it's going to do. They vote because that is their civic duty. But we don't teach civics anymore. So
for all the Republicans who say that Donald Trump has a mandate, we have to understand 25% of Americans either are not registered to vote or don't vote. 25%. Yeah. Kamala Harris got 49% of the vote. So right there, 74% of Americans did not vote for Donald Trump. 74%. Right.
But elections go to those who show up. And you know, I don't want to be condescending about it, but there are what are referred to as low information voters that come out of the woodwork to support one thing or another. They come out to support, I'm not even saying bad candidates. I supported Bernie Sanders. They came out to support them. They came out to support Obama because it was something new and different. And in the last three election, 2020, a lot of them came out in favor of Trump. You know, people are saying, well, the black vote went 85% for Harris this last time around, mostly because of men. Women were at 92%, black women. But the black vote was 85%. And this was seen as, you know, because it was less, it was 3 points less than Biden. I want to clarify that it's been lower before. I mean, John Kennedy only got 67% because he wasn't real strong on the civil rights issues. But black vote has been overwhelmingly for the Democrats ever since the last time the majority of black voters voted for a Republican was Hoover in 1928. After that, it was FDR. And since then, it's been and Johnson, I think, got like 95% of the black vote. Right. So it's not that low that we've been lower. I think Kerry got a little bit lower. But there are more black voters voting for Trump, more Latino voters and more working class voters in general, even more LGBTQ. These groups still voted for the Democrats, majority of them, but less so. And so people are saying, well, are people who voted Democratic 4 years ago changing their vote? Not necessarily. There is the new voters that come in to vote because they decide that Trump stands for something. And that they like and will represent something they like. So they come in and vote. One Latino gentleman said, I didn't know he was going to be doing mass deportations. And it was like, that was his number one plank on his platform, right? You know, and what he talked about doing all the time, he said, I just don't really pay attention to politics. First time he's ever voted.
But most importantly, Eric, Trump on day one lowered gasoline prices.
Yeah.
They've gone up 10%.
Right.
Trump said on day one he wasn't going to tax tips. He hasn't done that.
Yeah.
Trump said he was not going to tax your Social Security benefits. He lied. You know how you can tell Donald Trump is lying? His lips are moving.
Yes, no, it definitely, he has not kept a lot of those promises. And he also promised that he was going to focus almost exclusively on criminal people for the immigrants, but he's going after people that have been here for decades who are married to American citizens, but because they had some type of snafu with their paperwork, they're being held for days. Some of them also tourists, and we're losing tourists. I mean, you know, these are not things that he pledged to do. He did not pledge to keep tourists out because, you know, they for whatever reason. I think the Canadian woman who was in held for 12 days still doesn't know why she was held.
Right.
So it's just or when there was a British hiker who did a hike where she was given free board at the hostels or whatever, if she did some work, that's considered compensation apparently, and therefore she's being held because she worked, you know, without a visa, right?
I mean, Eric, you and I have to worry about getting knocked on the door at 4 a.m. and being renditioned. I'm not sure where they're going to send you and I, but
yeah,
they just might say we're enemies of the state because we said something bad about Trump, but we got to go.
There are citizens who are being hassled. They can't be kept out of the country, but are being hassled at the points of entry.
And I want to know, what are they going to do to the Cal Poly students who did all the vandalism and in one case, assaulted a police officer on film. What are they going to rendition them to? Back to Berkeley?
Nobody has identified the guy who hit the police officer.
How could they not? He's on film.
You see a hand out of the crowd, but the camera of the angle's from behind them. So you just see the hand of the crowd and the bottle bonking him. And that became kind of a meme, but the police have scoured those photographs and can't identify him.
At least I know when I beat on cops in the future, all I have to say is free Gaza first. And you can do whatever you want to the cops and the district attorney won't touch you. We learned something that day.
No, the district attorney did file charges.
On who?
The 18 or so who got arrested on that final night and two others who were.
And did they get evicted from the Cal Poly system?
Well, I don't know if they were students. The ones who were charged with assault and battery. I'm not sure they
were students. Did they do jail time? Because I haven't read this anywhere. Now I got research to do.
They did, and for several days they were in jail. I don't know that they've been convicted yet. I don't know if any of the trials have happened yet. But they're still doing plea bargain stuff. But they there's only so much they can do. They were trying to get people for the vandalism and the graffiti. But if they don't catch that on camera, it's really hard to prove it. That any one of them did that. And there were a lot of them who said they didn't approve of that. So at any rate, it's we can talk about that next time. I don't know that we're getting people getting rendition who, you know, for writing a paper or something like that, like is happening back east. This brings us to predictions. Matthew, what do you have to say?
I think there's going to be a lot of blowback. We're already hearing about renditions of foreigners who have a green card being sent off to El Salvador prisons. And this last week we had some guy got sent down there they weren't supposed to send. They're grabbing people off the street because they don't like their post on Facebook or they wrote a letter to the editor to the school newspaper. And I think at some point people are going to say it's not just that. It's the point they're not having due process. If they went in front of a judge, they had the information. We have them on film committing violence. We have them on film committing destruction. Get them out of the country. But without the due process, it looks really bad that they can snag anybody. The second thing I want to say is I hope that we start to get public about the cruelty of what Trump's ideas are. When it starts to affect people's food, shelter, and health care, it's going to affect votes in the future. That's my predictions.
All right. I've got one prediction, and things could change. It's a long time before the midterms, but after the abortion case came down, the Democrats were overperforming in elections. They didn't necessarily win them all, but they were overperforming in all the elections coming into 2024 because people who are interested in politics tend to vote in those elections more than those who don't. It used to be conservatives who would vote in them, but that's changed. I'm going to predict that in every special election leading up to the midterm, Democrats are going to overperform. That doesn't mean they're going to win the election. It just means they're going to do better than the polls and better compared to whatever happened in those areas in 2024.
I agree with you.
We'll find out if any of that comes true, but until next time, stay informed and stay engaged.